2. Chamberlain. He dreamed of Maine and ice-black water. He awoke to a murderous sun. A voice was calling, "Colonel Darlin." He squinted. The whiskery face of Buster Kilrane.
"Colonel Darlin, I hate to be waking you, but there's a message here you ought to be seeing."
Chamberlain had slept on the ground. He rolled to a sitting position. Light boiled in through the tent flap. Chamberlain closed his eyes.
"And how are you feeling this morning, Colonel, me lad?"
Chamberlain ran his tongue around his mouth. He said briefly, dryly,
"Ugh." "We're about to be having guests, sir, or I wouldn't be waking you."
Chamberlain looked up through bleary eyes. He had walked 80 miles in 4 days through the hottest weather he had ever known, and he had gone down with sunstroke. He felt an eerie fragility, like a piece of thin glass in a high, hot wind. He saw a wooden canteen held in the big hand of Kilrane, cold drops of water on varnished sides. He drank. The world focused.
120 men, Kilrane said.
Chamberlain peered at him.
"They should be arriving any moment,"
Kilrane said. He was squatting easily, comfortably, in the opening of the tent, the light flaming behind him.
"Who?" Chamberlain said. "They are sending us some mutineers," Kilrane said with fatherly patience. 120 men from the old Second Maine, which has been disbanded."
"Mutineers?"
"Aye. What happened was that the enlistment of the old Second ran out, and they were all sent home except 120, which had foolishly signed 3-year papers. And so they all had 1 year to go. Only they all thought they were signing up to fight with the Second, and Second only, and so they mutinied. 120. Are you all right, Colonel?"
Chamberlain nodded vaguely.
"Well, these poor fellows did not want to fight no more, naturally, being Maine men of a certain intelligence, and refused. Only nobody'll send them home, and nobody knew what to do with them, until they thought of us, being as we are the other Maine regiment here in the army. There's a message here signed by Meade himself. That's the new general we got now, sir, if you can keep track as they go by. The message says they'll be sent here this morning and they are to fight. And if they don't fight, you can feel free to shoot them."
"Shoot?"
"Aye."
"Let me see." Chamberlain read painfully. His head felt very strange indeed, but he was coming awake into the morning, as from a long way away, and he could begin to hear the bugles out across the fields. "Late to get moving today. Thank God. Somebody gave us an extra hour. Bless 'em." He read. "You are therefore authorized to shoot any man who refuses to do his duty."
"Shoot?"
he said.
"These are all Maine men?"
"Yes, sir. Fine big fellers. I've seen them. Logging men. You may remember there was a bit of a brawl some months back during the Mud March. These fellers were famous for their fists."
Chamberlain said, 120?
"Yes, sir."
"Somebody's crazy."
"Yes, sir."
"How many men do we now have in this regiment?"
"Ah, somewhat less than 250, sir, as of yesterday, counting the officers."
"How do I take care of 120 mutinous men?"
"Yes, sir,"
Kilrane sympathized.
"Well, you'll have to talk to them, sir."
Chamberlain sat for a long moment, silently trying to function. He was 34 years old, and on this day 1 year ago, he had been a professor of rhetoric at Bowdoin University. He had no idea what to do. But it was time to go out into the sun. He crawled forward through the tent flap and stood up, blinking, swaying, one hand against the bole of a tree. He was a tall man, somewhat picturesque. He wore stolen blue cavalry trousers and a 3-foot sword, and the clothes he wore he had not taken off for a week. He had a grave, boyish dignity, that clean-eyed, scrubbed-brain, naive look of the happy professor.
Kilrain, a white-haired man with the build of an ape, looked up at him with fatherly joy.
"If you'll ride the horse today, Colonel, which the Lord hath provided, instead of walking in the dust with the other fools, you'll be all right. If you wear the hat. It's the walking, do you see, that does the great harm.